Welcome to The Positivity Effect, where paying it forward and doing something positive in someone's life can provide them with the confidence and motivation to do the same for someone else. Like a stone dropped into a lake, let's create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. And it begins with your host, Dr. Thomas Retscher.
What's up, everyone? Dr. Tom here. Welcome back to The Positivity Effect, episode number 14. If you're loving the show, please subscribe to the newsletter at positivityeffect.com and write back to me, guys. I'd love to hear about how the show has affected your life, and I know the guests, they'd love to know as well. All right, so let's dive right into it. Today I have on Alex Sharfin, a personal consultant to billionaires, and he's consulted with many Fortune 500 companies. There's much to Alex's journey, but I'll leave most of the storytelling to him. A very important part of his story is how his life was affected when the real estate market took a turn. You'll hear how difficult it was, but also how enlightening this time was. Through that, you'll also learn how important relationships are when going through difficult times. Some things I think you should really pay attention for is when Alex talks about transparency and process as it applies to marriage and business. In addition, listen to the last 10 minutes. Guys, they're really, really powerful. Alex now also has a business leadership school based in Texas where he teaches entrepreneurs of all ages, among other things, how to identify their personality types. In addition, he runs a very successful podcast called The Revolutionaries. You can reach out to Alex at sharfin.com. That's sharfen.com, where you'll also be able to find links to all of his social profiles. All right, guys, let's dive into it. Welcome back to another episode of The Positivity Effect. What's going on, Alex?
Hey, Thomas, thanks so much for having me. I'm really honored to be here.
Absolutely, Alex, and it's just an honor to have you here as well. So thank you so much for coming on. And I'd love to kick off this conversation talking about something that's a big part of your life, and that's the business and personal relationship that you have with your wife. And I'd love for you to talk about that downturn moment that you guys had with the real estate business. I think it's really empowering to hear about how what you guys went through and how you came out of it.
So I met my wife when about 12 years ago, and I was working as a consultant. I had a large international consultancy, not working with entrepreneurs. We worked primarily, we did work with some, but we worked primarily with the Fortune 500, Global 100. I had 12 offices in Latin America and the United States, and we were doing about $100 million a year. And Thomas, I had looked I'd wanted to get married for a while. I wanted to be in a relationship and have a family. And as part of that, I'd always been a train wreck. And so as part of that, I'd seen a therapist. I'd really kind of gotten my act together, thought about it a lot, stopped just dating for the sake of dating, and really started focusing. So when I met Katie, the night we met, I called my mom and told her, I think I met the girl I'm going to marry, because I was looking for her. And she lived in Dallas. I lived in Fort Lauderdale. We met in Tampa. We were both traveling. And she came out, I think, 3 or 4 weeks later and spent 5 or 6 days with me, and then moved out 2 weeks later, and we were married a year and a half later, and we've been together ever since. And I think it might have been 2 or 3 months before we started working together. And we were successful. I left the consultancy. It confused everybody. I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to take the time that it was going to take to adjust the business to have to sell it. And I was traveling 90% of the time. So I sold out, for a fraction of what I could have. It just wasn't important, and we took the money and got into real estate, and we were crazy successful. So Katie and I got into real estate. We did 1,800 deals. We were personally signed paper on 400 of them where we took responsibility. We became one of the biggest marketing engines in real estate in South Florida, and then we built a huge portfolio. And in 2007, we realized that we owned 100% of our properties were in six of the top 10 fastest depreciating zip codes in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah. It was this day where, like, I have a new family, you know, a new kid. Reagan was born kind of when the crisis started. So she's like the crisis baby. And it was crazy. We overnight, everything fell apart. My wife and I were making millions, and we lived in a $1 million house, and I had a $100,000 car and all the stuff that makes you look important. And we had a huge multi-million-dollar portfolio. We were well over halfway to retirement. Quite frankly, had we been able to harvest the money from everything, we could have retired. We didn't have to work anymore. And when things came off the tracks in South Florida, people don't have perspective how bad things were, but we lost over half of our value in a year. Not 20%, not 30%, half. And so I'll give you perspective. We owned four condos that were worth between $160,000 and $180,000 each. We owed $80,000 to $90,000 on them. So we were 50%, Thomas. That's pretty good. The lowest price one of those sold for was $15,500, a 90% reduction in value.
Wow.
On a house. On a house. So that's what we lived through. And you know, it's funny that this podcast is the positivity effect, and we go to the most negative time in my life, right? Or what would seemingly be the most negative time in my life. I'm not going to lie to anyone and say that I enjoyed going bankrupt. It was horrible. You know, the day that Katie and I had to go to the attorney and give them our social security numbers so that they could prove that we were failures was one of the most devastating days of my life. And for a week, I don't think I did anything or Katie did anything. And I remember reaching out to a friend of mine and explaining what had happened and telling him all about it. His name's Alan Waxman. And it was funny, Thomas. He, you know, you reach out to someone, and I was looking for a shoulder to cry on, right?
Right, right.
I called out and I said, Alan, you know, here's what's happened. And I started listing everything. Like, we lost half of the value. We've had 2 years of hurricanes. I've lost over, you know, $2 million in deductibles, like cash out of my bank account I'll never see again. We just got hit again with damage. You know, now the market's falling apart. No properties are selling. We're not making any money. Our income's gone down 90%. And I remember saying, Alan, we have no choices. So we're going bankrupt. And Alan like paused. And I remember him like I had told him I changed a tire, you know, with the same level of emotion. He goes, Alex, I suggest that you look at that differently. You have plenty of choices. You could have ignored this. You could have pretended like nothing was happening, continued to run up your debt, gone into more debt, run away. You've decided to go bankrupt. Sounds logical. Now own it and move forward. What are you going to do next?
Now, Alex, for those listening, and I want to talk about this everything, you know, that you're mentioning with the real estate, but I want to tie in also. I'm thinking back to when you were just talking about the consulting firm. You know,
yeah.
Somebody listening might say, "You're making $100,000." You know, the money that you're making to that firm, like you walked away from that. Like that's what somebody might say, and they're like, they'd say, "You're crazy, Alex. Why did you do that?" And you know, I want you to explain to us how, you know, you recognized that it wasn't about the money at that point. It was about, there was something more that you were looking for. It wasn't just about that, you know, that paycheck at the end of the day.
Yeah, Thomas, I have a weird relationship, I think, with money. Because in my life, when I was very young, I was able to create a lot of money in a short period of time. And, That was in school. That was in you know, I started a window washing business in high school. I was making $1,000 a week. That's more than most adults make. And that was in the 80s. Sorry, that was in the 90s. And I had to sell it because I signed paperwork that wasn't legal and stuff. I was 17. I didn't even know you had to be 18 to do insurance, but I was making $1,000 a week. So I've always been able to make money. And here's what I can tell you. There's been times in my life where money is flowing like water and I'm not happy. And there's been times in my life where money seems elusive, but I am happy. And so a long time ago, I disconnected my happiness from exclusively money. But I'm not going to bullshit you. You know, anybody who says money doesn't buy happiness has never had enough.
Right.
Because the
right.
fact is that, you know, you can say money doesn't buy happiness, but come on, man, we're entrepreneurs. There's a minimum amount of money for happiness to be an option. And I've never gone below that. But here's my minimum is low, brother. I'm an entrepreneur. I've struggled. You know, when Katie and I went bankrupt, we were living on $25,000 a month, and we cut down to $3,200 in 60 days.
Wow.
You know, you can do that. And here's the deal. Like, when entrepreneurs get caught up in money, I always explain to them, I had a friend who went bankrupt 2 years ago, and I felt so privileged that I had been bankrupt to be able to talk him through this, because I said to him, you know, here's what you don't know when you're going bankrupt. What you don't realize is that the only metric moving backwards is money, and it's just been reset to zero. So you can only have positive contrast going up, because here are the metrics that moved forward: experience, understanding, awareness, vision, knowing what you can get through, moving through challenges and obstacles, and overcoming things. And so in bankruptcy, really, the only place you move backwards is cash. You move forward with everything else. So when I left that business in exchange for a marriage, it felt trivial in comparison to spending 30 years looking for my wife.
So powerful. And, you know, now, and fast forward, you know, in your story of talking about that moment, you know, especially, you know, you said you did nothing for a week, but then you bounced back and you started thinking about how are you going to come back to this. And right, you know, if we would be crazy to say that money, you need money to achieve happiness in certain things in life. You know, there is a minimum amount that you need. But thinking about how you were able to transition from that, you know, from the international consulting job and, you know, your ability to take risk in new things. And then the words you just said, experience, understanding, awareness, you know, how important were those words and those ideologies to help you make that switch and start transitioning back? You know, it's amazing that after that fall in 2007, you were back in a year, just killing it.
Yeah. So here's what happened. I mean, everybody, you know, so many of these stories sound like mythologies, right? Like, yeah, the guy who went out of bankruptcy and then he's like a liquid millionaire really fast. And like, nobody understands how that happened. And I always tell people, like, if you're going to work with someone or listen to someone or follow them or give them any type of credibility, they better be able to explain to you in detail how they did what they did. Because I mean, isn't it just me, Thomas, or do a lot of people's careers these days sound like magic tricks?
Yeah, it's like boom, you know, I made $1 million overnight.
I was 24 years old. Look how smart I am, right? or you know, hey, look, I was in this industry for a year and a half. I've made $7 million. Let me show you how I did it. And that's not real.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks that's real bought 6-minute apps and they're still looking for their apps in 6 minutes, much less building that shit, right?
Yeah.
And the fact is that, like, you know, it takes time and it takes effort. And when we went through those challenges, here's what happened. You know, I'd done this before. I had seen people go bankrupt. I had a long history as a consultant. I'd seen entire organizations go bankrupt. In fact, I testified in bankruptcies. But when it was me, it changed everything. You know, I thought I was going through this financial process, and what it really was this insanely emotional process. And it felt like everything in my life failed. It felt like I was a broken human being. And, you know, Katie and I talked about it back then. And I remember when the foreclosure paperwork started showing up at my door, how overwhelming it was. Thomas, I had seen these hundreds of times. I was in real estate. You know, I'd spent 4 years, 1,800 deals. Do you know how many times I had been in front of foreclosure documents, in front of a foreclosure attorney, getting something out of the courthouse, helping someone here, helping someone there? But when it happened to me, I realized how really different it was and how emotional it was and how damaging it was. And so Katie and I had our you know, lives falling apart, but we had this asset. Our real estate was worth nothing. We literally had to turn the keys on our car. We had to give our house back to the bank, and we moved into a tiny townhouse in Boca, but we had this book that I had written called Mastering Short Sales for Real Estate Agents. And here's the fact, man, my wife saved us in that time because she refused to let us focus on the negative. And so every night before we went back to sleep, we had to tell each other three things we were thankful for. And I don't want this to sound like some fantasy, because there were days where I didn't want to hear the word thankful.
Oh, so true.
You know, and she would say, tell me the three things. And I would think, like, I want to punch you. I didn't ever punch her, but I thought that. And it's my wife. Like, you should never think I want to punch my wife for saying what's grateful.
Right.
But like, that's how animal those instincts are. But it's amazing how we draw ourselves out of that carnal soup of emotions and chemicals and physiological reactions. And when we elevate to admit and to be grateful for something, even in the center of all the things that are falling apart, that's how we connect to that place where we move forward. And, you know, we had written this book. Wiley offered us some money for it. It wasn't enough, and their contract was way too restrictive. And so Katie and I took the content, and we started teaching real estate agents how to help people with short sales. And we taught 62 people January 23rd and 24th, 2008. Previous to that, we were doing some consulting and stuff, so we made about $100,000 total between the two of us before expenses in 2007. That's it. And the next year, we made about $500,000, and then 2 years later, we were at $10 million at about 40% margins. And we were liquid millionaires in a year. But it came from, you know, being in that place of having everything cave in on us and finding the one asset we had that could help other people. And we focused on it. And, I don't want to sound like some type of a prophet or something, because it makes me sound goofy when I say, because it sounds like we're rewriting history, but I want everyone to understand, my wife really did say, if we're going to do this again, we have to do it differently. And she went out and bought the book Total Money Makeover. And from the very beginning, we weren't allowed to have debt. We weren't allowed to use leverage. We had to be really conservative. She wrote rules that made it so it was hard to grow a business, but it was more stable. And so we worked differently. And, you know, today we own our company free and clear. We own our homes free and clear. We have a huge portfolio of property here in Austin. And you know, we can do just about whatever we want financially. But here's the key. Even when we could, we didn't. And this time, we live on a fraction of our income. And, you know, this time, we make sure we had the emergency funds, and our emergency funds had emergency funds before we spend money. And you know, we now have income that comes in by itself from real estate, and still – we've lived in our house for 3 years, and we're furnishing and remodeling it this year because we have rules. Like, we don't spend money. We're conservative. We make money before we spend it. And like, that whole, all of that comes from that period of time.
You know, it's so powerful. So many Americans, including myself at times in my life, we live on this mentality of, you know, of before you even make the money, you spend, you know, and what having this mindset where you're now leveraging, but you're also making sure that there is that nest egg. You know, how important is that? What does that allow you to do? You know, so people are like, you know, why should I do this? Why should, you know, what is it going to help me by saving up a little bit of money? You know, even though I'm barely bringing anything in.
I would say that it changes everything. You know, the fact is for people like us, ambiguity of any kind doesn't work, right? Like, right. When you have doubts, how do you look at the rest of the world?
That's true. It's like your image is pretty much clouded. You're not seeing clearly through the lens. You're seeing through a clouded lens.
Here's what's so amazing about that. When we look at our finances, whether they're good or bad, if you're an entrepreneur like you and I, if you know the truth, there's stability.
And then you can almost be more, you can take more calculated risks when you know really where you're coming from.
Well, and you know, I don't even look at it as risk, Thomas. Here's how I look at it. If you know where you are with money, then there's no ambiguity. And for me, it is the unknown that drives people like you and I crazy, because I think we're wired differently than the rest of the world. And when we get to a place where there's too much pressure and too much noise in our lives, and then we have too many things that we don't know, there's unknown outcomes, we can get to overwhelm. And so for people like us to be in overwhelm, everything literally falls apart, because for us, doubt is progressive, fear is progressive, frustration is progressive, confusion is progressive. They all run in one direction. So anywhere that I can eliminate doubt, we do that. And so, you know, one of the things that I didn't tell about the story is that Katie and I knew we were going bankrupt because we knew our numbers. So part of the reason that I think we maintained stability through that time is we had clarity. And, you know, it's crucial for all of us. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so even before, you know, that final, you know, if you want to call it a bottoming out moment, you know, you were already mentally starting to make shifts in like, okay, this is happening. This is, you know, we have to make these, you know, it wasn't just like a, it happened. All right, now we have to make a shift. You were already starting.
No, it was like watching a slow motion train wreck for 3 years, Thomas. I mean, I know, you know, Katie and I know what it feels like to live in full fight or flight for a long time. Because what happened was 2 years prior, we had a huge real estate portfolio, new relationship. We built this thing up. Hurricane comes through and damages like 21 out of 30 properties. Wow. We spend like $500,000. I'm working 20-hour days. Katie's working 20-hour days. We got some leverage. We got some people. A year later, almost everything done. Hurricane comes through. 8 of our properties are condemned this time. And like all of them but 2 are damaged. Another $1 million. I'm spending time now at the code enforcement hearings. I'm going downtown to Fort Lauderdale. You look up my name, you can see we had properties that were actually condemned. So we're making $6,000 off a building, and it goes in 1 month from making 6 to spending 10.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it happened over and over. And so by the time we were meeting with an attorney, it had been a slow motion train wreck.
Can you say that figure one more time for everybody so they hear that? That's incredible. The making 6 and then the 10, just incredible.
Oh, that was one property. That was just one property. So I'll give you another example. We had some condos in Stonebridge Gardens, this place in Florida, where you can rent them for $1,000 a month. So you're paying $600, right? You're renting it for $1,000. You're making $400, and the tenant's living there. Then it gets condemned. You have to move the tenant into another place for $1,200 or $1,300 or $1,400 because you can't find anything as cheap. You're now not making $400. You're paying the original $1,000 mortgage. You're paying the $1,400 rent, and the tenant's giving you $1,000.
That's unbelievable.
That happened over and over.
And it was just, yeah, and like you said, it was a
it was
a
like
slow
just
burn.
Juggling chaos. Yeah, juggling chaos. And so by the time it hit us, like we knew it was coming, but we hadn't really admitted it until we went to the attorney's office.
Yeah, and you know, it's so important. I think, you know, you keep bringing up your relationship and through that, like how, for people listening, the positivity effect, they're trying to say, how can I be more positive in my life? How can I be, you know, how can I have more gratitude? And I think one of the key factors in life is having a strong relationship.
I have two suggestions for entrepreneurial personality types. And you know our content, Thomas. I see entrepreneurial personality types as those who want to do something new. They want to make a difference. They are driven to contribute. They want to change the status quo. And for those people, here's my rules to live a happy life. Number one, your relationship is most important. And number two, transparency in your relationship is most important in the relationship. Everything else, go back to rule number one.
The transparency, right? Like when...
No. Your relationship's most important is rule number one.
Rule number one.
And number two, transparency in your relationship is most important. And so like make your relationship number one and be 100% transparent.
I think, right. Like what happens when you're not transparent?
So here's why I say that to people. If you're in a relationship where anything has elevated over importance beyond that relationship, you are personally at risk. And people always say, like, Alex, I don't understand what you mean by that. So let me give you the math. You chose this relationship, and that person chose you. So there's an intelligence level there. They selected you. You did this purposefully, and you're working through something. And if you're in a relationship where the business becomes more important, the project becomes more important, something else becomes more important, that's usually because you're isolating from the spouse you chose that was going to keep you honest in life. And we all know that's the role our spouse plays. And so when we're honest and we go to them and we say, you know, we make the relationship first. We say, hey, something's going on in the business and I don't feel like we're connected. You know what happens? We resolve the business that much faster. When we are distracted or isolating or frustrated or we're overwhelmed by something and we go to our spouse and we say, hey, relationship's more important. I need to tell you what's going on. We resolve that much faster. And the fact is that all of us have been taught to keep things to ourselves, not share. You know, we're the kids who were told, sit down, shut up, don't move, don't sit still. You know, you're doing too much. And so we're not good at asking for help. We're not good at being proactively transparent and letting people know what's going on with us. If we practice that and we become experts in our relationship, that bleeds over into the whole world.
Alex, what does that look like you know, personally for you, is that something, you know, in term, maybe generic terms, like, is it, is there certain things that, especially because you guys, you and your wife work together, you guys,
we do,
you know,
yeah,
and that's, some people don't know what that's really like, you know, is there certain things that, points that you kind of touch on every week that, you know, you you know, if you didn't, you know, things would fall by the way. So you have to make sure that you're, you know, what are some of those things that you guys kind of connect with?
Here's, you know, Katie works with a lot of married entrepreneurs, and she always says, you know, it's not sexy, but process in a marriage changes everything. And here's what's interesting. We build our careers and we build all kinds of process around careers to make it successful, right? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to spend time with this person. I'm going to go learn this. Look at this. You know, people who get into working out, they build all kinds of process around working out. I'm going to go to the gym these days, eat this way, drink this way. You're following me so far, right?
Oh yeah. I feel like you're actually you're talking about me right now.
Right. And so it's interesting because then they say, hey, I'm going to be successful. And then they build all kinds of process around success. Right?
Right.
Then they get married and go, this shit better work. Right?
Yep.
And then
because XYZ worked.
Well, it's like, no, because I'm getting married, it should work.
It's right. It just should.
You know, nothing in our lives has ever worked. But when we get married, we're like, why isn't this working? Well, you dumb shit. What has? You've worked at it. You've created it. It started out really crappy. Most of what we've ever done has started out terrible. And then you made it something. And so when we get married, it's the beginning of working on it. It's the beginning of creating who we are. You know, and I think that it doesn't matter who you are, and it doesn't matter what type of, you know, marriage you're in, if it's, you know, traditional marriage, non-traditional marriage, or even just a long-term committed relationship, if you're committed and you're putting the time in, it's the growth in that relationship that causes us to grow the most as human beings. And I think that whether we intend to or not, we will always have the greatest influence on and be influenced most by our spouses. Let's make that as positive as we can. And the fact is that there is no issue in a relationship that cannot be overcome through transparency. And most issues in relationships, I would say all, begin through a small, sometimes unperceptible loss of transparency.
And once it's raising your awareness level. Right. It's
absolutely.
And it's interesting that we're talking about relationships, but also when you tie it back into business, I think, like you said, you said at the top of the interview, how it, like, you hear about these businesses like, oh, you're going to make $1 million overnight. Like,
yeah,
it's not the truth, you know,
and it's not real.
And relationships too, like, oh, you're going to have this amazing, beautiful marriage as soon as you, you know, you say yes and you walk out and then, you know, once the wedding's over and, you know, you're back from your honeymoon, like, that's the goal, and you're going to continue. It's a process of learning each other and being, like you said, 100% transparent and continually every single day. Not even like, you know, I'm going to take her out once a week every dinner. Like, that's such a crazy mindset. Like, you know, you're just making a check mark of what you did for the week for your spouse, you know? And I think we think about in our business too. Like, it's just, I created a check mark and now I did it. So I'm going to make $1 million. And it's crazy to think that way.
Yeah. I mean, some of the process that Katie's built into our marriage, it's not the sexiest thing, but here's what works. Like, once a week, we get together and we talk about, like, where are you, where am I, and where are we going, right? And it's our weekly alignment meeting. Once a month, we sit down and we look at our finances and we say, you know, where are we, where are the properties, where's the business, what are we comfortable with, what are we going to do? That only has to happen once a month. So argument about finances doesn't ever happen in our house. We have a conversation once a month and everybody has an understanding. We don't get up until there's consensus. Those are two that are just fundamental. And just doing that will change things. And then, you know, we've added process. Like, we make sure we're going out enough. We make sure that we're going on real vacations, that we're spending time with the kids. And here's something, you know, that a friend of mine, Kirk Dando, said a long time ago, and it stuck with me. He said, you know, most entrepreneurs say the most important thing in their lives is their wife and kids. If you show me their checkbook or their calendar, I'll show you that that's not true. And so I don't think we can ever make it so that our calendar alone would show that our husband or wife and kids are most important. But I do think that if you can't prove it somewhere in the calendar and somewhere in the checkbook, then it's not real. And so we really focus on like how many real days of vacation did we have? How much time did we spend with the kids? Are we doing our weekly meeting? Are we looking at our financials monthly? And when we do those things, it's amazing how everything else gets easier. It's never perfect. It's never perfect. I think, in fact, striving for perfection in a marriage ensures you're going to fail. But it has gotten dramatically better, and it continues to.
I think that, and that metaphor that applies for business too, right? Like, you're never going to—
There's no question.
Reach this point where everything just works perfectly.
Well, Thomas, here's what we tell people. You know, from the entrepreneur's point of view, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, we see entrepreneurs as perfect, and I'm not kidding, because every entrepreneur, every human we've ever dealt with has amazing strengths that when they can be drawn out, you don't see what's wrong with them. So why focus there? But when it comes to a business, we always reinforce with entrepreneurs, your business is broken. And if things go well, it always will be. And here's what I mean by that. You do not want a perfect business. It's closed.
Yeah.
The only perfect business is the one that doesn't operate anymore, because the day you open in a dynamic market and environment, and then you involve human beings, it will always be broken. The goal of a business is an adaptable enterprise that can take advantage of opportunities over time and increase value for all stakeholders. And what that means is it's not perfect. In fact, it's actively seeking the fissures and cracks. It knows that they're there and it wants them and it's looking for them. And you teach everyone that. You reward when we find mistakes. You look for the imperfections and then you make minor adjustments until it happens again and you move forward. And so, yeah, no, it's very similar.
You think that's why it's so hard for some people to get started in anything in their life, you know, whether it's like, I want to have more fitness, I want to eat better, I want to, you know, have some more money to buy a better car, I want to be a nicer person in my community and give back to the community. It's like, there's so many, you know, we're exposed to how many freaking marketing images on a daily basis. Like, I think people are just so beat up nowadays about, you know, perfection that they just can't even get started.
I think that, you know, it's perfection, Thomas, but you make such a good point. You know, I think I recently saw that, geez, I don't want to misquote, but I think I was up at the Titan Summit, and the average person is exposed to something like 63,000 messages a day.
That's insane.
Insane. Like, I really had to do math on that. Like, is it possible? And I didn't think it was, but then I realized just walking by a bookshelf, you're exposed to hundreds of messages, right? I asked the speaker, I said, how does that equate? I don't get it. He said, well, think about the last time you walked by, say, a newsstand. Consciously, you didn't pick up all the titles, but subconsciously you did. And it shocked me. And I was like, you're right. We really are at this point of massive overwhelm. And then I look at my clients and I look at the people we work with and most entrepreneurs, and here's what's going on for most of them. They can kind of see the finish line. They know where they want to go. They know there's this big contribution, this thing. And for some, it's perfect. Like, they can see it. They know what it looks like. They can define it. They can tell you what it's like. And they know kind of what they want to do with their lives, but they can't get it to translate to what do I do today to make it happen. And I think it's this marketing message that's killing us. You know, I kind of made fun of it earlier, and I talk about it a lot. It's this do very little, make almost no behavioral change, but buy this product and you'll get an amazing result, right? And it sounds like buy this product, start this business, be rich in 90 days. Buy this product, do this thing, and you'll have great abs in 6 minutes. Buy this product, do this other thing, and without surgery, without this, without that, you're gonna have this improvement, right? And the fact is what people are saying is get results without effort. And if you could sell that, they wouldn't sell it.
What is that process where someone, they wake up one morning, you know, they wake up and they're like, what the heck is going on in my life? You know, how do they get to that point where they're like, you know, they have no idea, any direction, they just, you know, and it's like complete train wreck because they don't know what happened. You know, is it because of this, they had zero tracking in terms of anything that they were doing?
Absolutely. You know, here's the problem, Thomas, is that we are really adaptable, right? And those, by the way, anybody listening to this podcast, you know, you're one of us, you're an entrepreneurial personality type, or you wouldn't have hit play. You know, you don't go to the positivity effect because you want to be a toll collector. You go to the positivity effect because you want to go change things in the world. And so, you know, that desire, that drive, that need to make the effect is what gutturally drives us. And so, Thomas, you tell me, can you turn it off?
No, it's like I can't even sleep at night because I'm so excited. I just want to keep giving back, you know?
Right. And so your drive, your desire is for contribution in general, right?
Right.
Okay. So when we're tracking anything in our lives, that contribution comes true. And I can't tell you how often I've taken someone where it's my whole life is shitty and all they start doing is tracking their workouts. And guess what? Work gets better. Marriage gets better. Relationship with kids gets better. How many times have you seen that?
Over and over.
Right? You take someone who, hey, life is all shitty. Hey, let's just spend time playing with your kids. You're going to track 4 hours a week just playing with the kids, no phone. Guess what? Everything gets better. And so if things aren't going well, pick something that you can focus on. Because here's what's so interesting. I interview wildly successful people all the time. I have a podcast called The Evolutionaries. And what you hear from them is this. I set out on this really, you know, interesting journey of something, right? I'm going to go get it. I'm going to make $100,000. I'm going to buy a Ferrari. I'm going to have a million-dollar business. I'm going to – whatever the I'm going to was – here's what I can tell you 100% of the time was fact. I am going to only created the energy so that they could create the real outcome. Because I'm going to go make $100,000. You tell me what happens. You gain energy. You gain experience. You gain an understanding for yourself. You gain confidence, wisdom. You have momentum. You see things you've never seen before. Because here's what I want you to know about our type of people is that when we set out on a direction, we will learn whatever it takes to make it happen.
It's like once you put it out there, once you put it out in the universe, it starts to take momentum.
Yeah, you can't stop it. And so start measuring, tracking. Because if you're measuring and tracking what's happening, you never get to overwhelm, even when it's bad.
So powerful. Alex, you know, I think contribution, you know, it's such a powerful word, and we just keep coming back to it. You know, for you, what does that look like for you in your life and how, you know, through everything you've been through and now how you're giving back to so many, you know, you have the podcast, you have the consulting, you do real estate, everything you do where you now are paying it forward and teaching others, you know, what does that look like in your life in terms of, you know, just how you focus around helping others learn these methods and how it really, it pays it forward and you see the dividends in your own life. Maybe not only, you know, yes, monetarily, but also just, it just makes you get up every morning and have purpose in life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, Thomas. You know, I've been motivated by a lot of things in my life. When I was a kid, I was motivated almost entirely by money. Anybody who knew me back then probably would have said things like, well, actually, that's not true. The people who knew me back then did say things like cutthroat and asshole and jerk and narcissist and stuff like that, especially when I was like in management situations. And then there was a period of time in my life I was motivated by scale. I wanted to see if I could. And I could. I did over and over again, and it worked, you know. And when I got together with Katie, it was more I wanted to build the life we had, and I wanted an outcome, a marriage, all, you know, the things that I thought I wanted. So I went into real estate, and it was the outcome more than what we were doing day to day.
So was it like it been there, done, the money, you did it. It just kind of became dry.
You know what? Here's what happened. Like the money came in anyway, right? And today here's where it's so different. Ever since I was a kid, I always felt like I was different. And I've always felt like I was isolated and alone. And, you know, I was the kid in school who didn't really fit in. I was I didn't have a lot of friends. I went from the special education to gifted and talented back to special education in a 3-year swing. It was hard. And my whole life, you know, I knew that there was other people like me, but I always felt isolated. And through research and through an understanding of what I've been doing, this new business that we have, the entrepreneurial personality type, defining who I am has been a personal journey to help others. And when in May, we took the beginnings of this personality archetype concept and shared it at Joe Polish's office, the way that people responded to me was different than I've ever had in my life. I remember a really well-known person in the room. I won't use her name because that's a mastermind that's confidential. But a household name said, you just taught me more about myself in 10 minutes than anyone ever has. And another person in the room said, I think I now understand more about myself and my 14-year-old son than I did, you know, before. And it was just crazy, the type of feedback.
Wow.
And so today, the drive is so much different than it's ever been. You know, I'm so lucky that I have a good team around me, because I've crossed that threshold in contribution where it's rational anymore. You know, I wake up every day wanting so badly to help that I'm willing to do just about anything. And I need huge guardrails from the people around me right now to keep me sane. Because here's what I know. People like us have existed forever and we're different. And it's not that most of society's systems don't support us. It's that they actively break us. And we either game the system or survive the system to get through. And when we finally do, sometimes there's not enough left to move forward. And I think that for every entrepreneur that's successfully running a business or doing a podcast like you, there's multiple entrepreneurs like us that are in rehab or in jail or dead, because society's systems don't help. They break us. And people don't understand us, or they wouldn't say things to us like, sit down, stop moving, it'll be okay, because that sends us into a panic. And the fact is, we're different. And I'm not saying, you know, different necessarily better. I believe that.
Right.
I'm saying different, and we need to respect it. Because the fact is that the kid who is willing to stand up and say, I want to change the status quo, create a podcast out of thin air, say, hey, look at me, I'm going to do something different. A lot of people see that as a risk taker. I see that as a supremely confident entrepreneur working on their contribution. And the problem is, most of us don't get support. And that kid who is willing to ask the question, who has more energy than anyone else, who's more restless than anyone else, who can't hold back when something is bothering them, does not get support growing up. And so today, when I think of contribution, I think of every kid anywhere in any school that's feeling constraint. I think of any entrepreneur in a cubicle somewhere that feels like they're broken because at some point in time in their life, they were told they had a disability or a disorder.
Yeah.
And I think of every kid who's told you have ADD, bipolar, dyslexia, ADHD, mania, depression, or anything else that quite literally, when you read the symptoms, indicate brilliance, and they feel any other way than that, I can't sleep. And so for me, when I think of greater contribution, you know, we're driven like crazy to help business owners because I think it starts funded there. But I won't rest until there's not another kid that ever feels broken because they don't read like everyone else, talk like everyone else, look like everyone else, or sound like everyone else. Because I was told I was developmentally disabled in buildings that I could buy and sell today. And I don't want that to happen to any other kid ever. Because in my opinion, a diagnosis like bipolar, Asperger's, ADD, ADHD, or any of that shit that is made up to create addicts is a foregone conclusion. Once you get the diagnosis, you're going to have it anyway. And there's far too many people like you and I under attack today. And the younger generations are becoming more and more aware. And as they become more aware, society systems are becoming more and more constraining. And what we see is children who understand the fallacy of school, who understand how it doesn't work, and who understand that nobody's really telling them the truth, are now, instead of 4 hours a year in standardized testing, they might spend 4 days a year when they don't have preparation, pre-testing, or standardized testing. Mm. And the confluence of increased awareness with increased constraint and decreased movement, creativity, and freedom is destroying a generation of people just like me. And I won't rest until it stops.
Man, Alex, like, you couldn't have said it like more beautifully. Like, I was just thinking, like, you know, about everything that you've been doing and everything you've done in life and, like, what is the impact, you know, that Alex wants to be remembered for? And that, like, that is just an incredible summary of, like, what you are doing in life and what, you know, I hope everybody listening to this, to go back and listen to this again, because I mean, I have like goosebumps right now, man. And that was so powerful. So powerful. You know, thank you for sharing that. And it goes back to the beginning of the interview, talking about transparency, man. Like, just, I can say goodbye right now. Goodbye. That's it.
Thomas, I just want to leave everybody with a thought.
So beautiful.
You know, if you think right now to your childhood, there's only a small handful of people that got you through. Like, if you're really objective, there's a small handful of mentors. Maybe some of them look like family. Maybe they look like teachers, coaches, someone. But those were the people who actually made your life possible. I often tell people, I think my immediate family and a few teachers saved my life and my wife helped me create one. But had I not had the right people in the right places, I don't know that I would have made it. And the amazing thing about people like us is that all it takes to make us feel value is the encouragement of someone else like us. So for the next time you see somebody who looks weird or different or has an idea that isn't supportable or who maybe isn't like everyone else, understand that in that moment of perception, you can change that person's life by just helping them move forward.
Man, and that's the ripple effect, Alex. That's so powerful. Thank you so much. Man, I wish we can go for like 4 hours. I'm like so locked in with you mentally right now, and this was just so awesome. You know, Alex, I hope to have you back in the future. You were so incredible. I hope everybody got a lot out of this. And, you know, the audience, they're well aware they could find links to everything of value that we mentioned in today's episode by going to positivityeffect.com, clicking on that podcast tab, and finding your name right in the archives. So thank you so much, man.
Thomas, it was my pleasure. And if your guests want to send in questions or comments, and I can come back in a couple months and we can answer them, and I'd be happy to come back. I love your style.
Excellent. That would be wonderful. I'd love it. So thank you so much. So generous with your time, your stories, your energy. We've definitely, I know I have been empowered by your positivity, Alex. Thank you. Be well.
Thanks, brother. It's my pleasure, and there's nothing wrong with you.
Take care, buddy. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Positivity Effect. I promise to keep sharing inspiring stories with the guests each and every Monday. I hope you feel inspired, and I hope that we stirred some self-reflection in you on topics like transparency and compassion and empathy. Please check out the website at positivityeffect.com. Sign up for the newsletter, and I'll send you some tips to get you thinking more positively. I would also love to hear from all of you, so please write to me, because every Sunday I'm going to share an inspiring story from one of the listeners, just like yourself. If you have a story where you exhibited compassion towards someone or you paid it forward, I'd love to hear about it. So thanks again. If you love the show, please head over to iTunes, leave a review. It means the world. Take care, and talk to you next Monday.